Welcome one and all to another day here at the Damage Report. I'm John Iadarola, very lucky to be joined today on the program by Jordan Yule. Jordan, broadcasting from deep within the ocean. How's it going?
I'm drowning here, John. But I'm
can we do the wide shot so they can see it more?
It's spectacular. This is a great shot. I can't take credit for it.
I just want to see like a manatee float by, like munching on some kelp.
Yeah, this is nice. This is better than my typical setup.
I like it. It's very flattering lighting and everything. It's a whole new you. Anyway. No, Addie's done a great job in designing her setup. But either way, very glad to have you here. And as I always do, we try to choose stories that our guests are going to be interested in. I feel like we're going to get you on a few of these. I think you're going to like them. I think the audience is going to like them.
Can't wait.
So anyway, I'm glad to have you here. Glad to have all of you out in the audience here. Thank you for being here. And I know what you're probably wondering. Well, John, you and Jordan are going to be giving me all this news. What can I do? Well, there is something you can do. You can hit the like button. That would be great. I mean, there's more you can do. It's almost literally the digital bare minimum, but you could at least do that. Come on. Sorry, I always guilt people in the pre-show into hitting the like button, and I feel like it's now seeping into every other part of my life. Thank you for just being here. That's lovely as well. And by the way, if you want to send us any comments, tweets, or super chats as we launch into fun discussions of things like updates on what's going on in East Palestine, the proposed genocide against Palestinians living in a particular town, and what is the wheelchair over cliff attack actually about? We're going to figure it out live on the show, and we're going to unveil the rise of the super dogs. So we got a lot to talk about. If you have any comments, tweets, super chats about that, send them to us. We'll read your comments. Maybe you get a $100 Blue Apron gift card. You never know. The only way you can find out is to send a message. And with all that said, Jordan, you ready to talk about some news?
John, I was born ready.
Okay, you remain born ready. Let's do it. A couple of days ago, Donald Trump rolled out a new attack against Ron DeSantis. And ever since I read it, myself and I think a lot of people are trying to figure out what is going on in Trump's head right now. Because largely, we'll bring it up right now. We've shown it on the show. I like much of this attack because it's focused on Ron DeSantis's advocacy for cuts to Medicare and Social Security. I want the Republican primary to be based on substance. But amongst all of that, Trump also says that he, Ron DeSantis, is a wheelchair over the cliff kind of guy, which is a weird thing to say. And as soon as that came up, a lot of people thought that they had landed on what this is a reference to. And I think there is some reason to believe this. So here is what people think Trump is referencing in that attack. You know, that clip from Mac and Me made famous, I think, by Conan O'Brien playing that for Paul Rudd over and over and over again over the years. And okay, so that's not like a political thing. So why would Trump be referencing that? Well, it's on TV and that dude loves watching TV. There's no way he's not familiar with that. Jordan, what do you think?
Yeah, that's a great guess. But ultimately, you know, Republicans are trying to cut things like Social Security. We see there's a quiet bipartisan effort to let additional food stamp benefits expire. Maybe with this, he is trying to draw or illustrate how senior citizens benefit from programs like Social Security, and many of them rely on a wheelchair. Perhaps that's giving him
I doubt it.
A huge benefit of the doubt. I think the TV thing is right, but it shows. He even understands this is the third rail of politics. You don't want to touch this. And that Republicans are willing to do it just shows their callousness. And what's really infuriating is some of the media has helped them in their efforts to distort and distract and obfuscate what they're ultimately trying to do by saying sunset, by trying to increase the age requirement or age limit. Those are ultimately just cuts because you've been paying into them. If you get them 5 years later, that is tacitly a cut. So that he even recognizes that shows just how, I guess, out of the ordinary he is in that party. but really at large, how bad the Republican Party is for America.
Yeah, 100%. And it doesn't necessarily, like, him running on this doesn't mean that he, if he were to become president again, wouldn't be okay with those sorts of cuts. I mean, remember in 2016 when he was running, he was like, we're gonna have single payer healthcare. And I kind of feel like he didn't push for that as president. But I do like those sorts of attacks. They not only hurt Ron DeSantis, but they hurt the Republicans that are right now trying to do this. So that's good. Anyway, I was pretty sure it was the Mac and me thing. And I like that because it's stupid and it makes sense for Trump to reference it. But on yesterday's show, JR raised another possibility. And I kind of feel like JR is right. Here is what JR thinks he was referencing. That is a real political ad that ran 10 years ago attacking Paul Ryan. That's who that guy is supposed to be. The Progressive Agenda Project Action Fund. I honestly, like, I knew what was gonna be in the ad and I was still shocked by what was in the ad. That's a crazy ad to run, but I kind of like it. So that makes sense for that to be what Trump is referencing, because he was trying to compare Ron DeSantis to Paul Ryan. But like, Trump remembering an ad from 10 years ago that I had forgotten, it makes sense. It's about Medicare cuts and all that. And I wonder now, are we gonna see, like, you know, Ron DeSantis in big white boots pushing another granny off the cliff or something? Like, where is this campaign gonna go, Jordan?
I like that ad. I don't remember it, but I like it. And
I like it.
It brings to mind how Romney and Ryan's campaign was tanked by Mitt Romney's open callousness. Well, I guess it wasn't open because it was behind closed doors. But Mitt Romney's callousness, talking about how, you know, nearly half the country feels like they're entitled to things like food and shelter, which those are human rights. Those should be human rights here. And, you know, Paul Ryan had no problem with that type of a comment. And neither does most of the Republican Party. Rick Scott is one of the architects of cutting these programs. He just recently, because of the heat he was facing after the State of the Union, took his plans to cut Social Security out of his big proposal. His plan for the Republican Party. He had some name for it, but they're feeling the heat. And that's a result of public pressure, because these programs are really popular. People need them, people rely on them, and people have been paying into them for years. Republicans want to cut them or privatize them to help further enrich their Wall Street and their corporate donors, because those are the people and those are the special interests who want to see those as opportunities for more profit. You know, people pushing back on this is working, and you can see that in everyone trying to cover their tails. So the more people talk about this, the more people call their members of Congress, and the more people push back, the more successful we will be in stopping these attempts to cut these programs.
Yeah, it is maddening that they can, like, we refer to it as like a third rail or whatever, and it so should be. Like, these are things that people literally pay into their entire lives, and they've been around since before they were alive. And yet every couple of years, politicians are like, you know what, let's screw all of them over. And the fact that the Republicans could get into office with some of them openly promising that they're gonna do this, and now they're talking about it, and none of the millions of conservatives that rely on these programs seem to have a problem with that. I mean, like, I would toss that up against, like, the fact that apparently no conservative viewers of Fox care that all of the hosts were mocking them behind their back as dumb rubes and they didn't believe any of this. Like, how self-deluded can you be? How blind to what the political movement you're supporting is actually trying to accomplish? It's maddening. We're trying to get through to those people. My references right there probably are not gonna help the matter. But anyway, yeah. Look, I will just say on the wheelchair ad, it's the whole thing, the attack is weird. But again, Like, I would much rather have the next 6 months of Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis attacking each other on how extreme their policies are than just, you know, both of them pointing their cannons outward at the trans community or whatever. So honestly, Trump, hear, hear, I know you love applause. Let's keep it in this lane. How about that? Anyway, with that said, we have other news to get to. Oh, you know what I want to do? I'm trying to figure out a way to release this. So maybe someone on Twitch can put this up. Just out of curiosity, which do you think it was? Is it the Mac and Me or is it the Paul Ryan ad? Let me know. We'll give the results of the poll later on. Anyway, with that said, let's jump to important news. We want to give you an update on some of what's going on in East Palestine, starting with the cleanup. This entire time, for weeks now, there have been many people who've been dispatched there to try to clean up the situation, try to set everything right that's been destroyed by that horrific derailment. And what do you know, according to railroad union leaders, some of the workers who are participating in this cleanup are falling ill at the site of the derailment. This is according to a letter sent to government officials earlier this week, alleging that workers are getting sick with migraines and nausea and are not being provided necessary protective equipment. The American Rail System Federation claimed that Norfolk Southern has not provided personal protective equipment, including respirators, rubber overboots, and rubber gloves to workers dealing with the spilled chemicals as part of the company's cost-cutting business model. So look, it would be bad enough if it was just that they were in the area helping out with the recovery or something, and they weren't being provided with the necessary protective equipment. They are like directly interacting with the horrendous chemicals that have been spilled. And the train company, which we don't know for sure exactly how it happened, but it seems like it probably didn't help that they didn't take proper precautions, has followed up the horrendous result of that sort of policy by not taking the proper precautions when it comes to the people cleaning it up. And as of right now, it's not just them. I will remind you, residents of East Palestine, the surrounding area, have been reporting headaches and nausea, as well as diagnoses of chemical bronchitis and other health conditions. But don't worry, I keep hearing from Norfolk Southern, as well as the EPA, that they've done all these tests and there's nothing there. So I guess it's a collective delusion. Jordan, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I grew up about 15, 20 minutes away from East Palestine. So it's an area I know.
I didn't know
well.
That.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the people there, it's really frustrating, even though they're conservative. It's frustrating to see a lot of coastal liberals, and especially, you know, the CEO, Alan Shaw of Norfolk Southern, the investors, Wall
Frustrating,
Street class.
But I guess not surprising, because we are a country
in Washington just has generally dismissed
capture,
this.
Corporate capture,
turn a blind eye to it. It's been a couple weeks.
Regulating.
They got their photo ops
in, they're done.
Norfolk Southern, yeah.
Now, why isn't Alan Shaw the CEO of Norfolk Southern out there
and
cleaning up?
This company. Is the outcome.
Why aren't the shareholders
out
talking
there?
About it again?
Off of those workers' labor.
They're lobbying against them again.
Yeah, yeah, you're right about they're not gonna develop cancer overnight. This isn't the Toxic Avenger. It takes a lot of time. Respiratory illnesses can also develop over time. But don't worry, I'm sure in 10 years, when it turns out that there's like an 80% higher incidence of these things, the Republicans in Congress are definitely gonna allocate funds to help them out without John Stewart putting pressure on them. Yeah, this is horrendous. It was needless. I mean, the derailment was needless, let alone the burn, let alone all of the missteps in the response, both the ones that have already happened and the ones that look like they might happen, which I want to turn to now. I saw this headline and initially I was like, oh, this is good news. Biden aides way economic aid for East Palestine after derailment. And then I focused in on way and I thought, oh, that means they're considering it. And by the way, if you're considering doing a good thing, but you might not, don't publicize the fact that you are considering it, because now you've opened up the possibility that you will harm your efforts and the public perception of you even more by like, I thought about helping and then I thought the better of it. Why would you leak literally any of this? That is crazy. So they're, and by the way, even in the way that they're considering it, there are potentially some issues. So they're looking at whether existing federal money, they're not even talking about new money, can be used to provide small business loans to East Palestine, according to two people. They're also considering infrastructure improvements in the area. That could potentially be good. The talks are described as highly preliminary, and they might not do anything. So, I mean, why would you do anything? It's just a disaster. It's one of the worst environmental disasters of our lives and a huge PR disaster for the Biden administration right now. Why wouldn't they be highly preliminary? I mean, I'm pretty sure the derailment was 25 minutes ago. You haven't had weeks to discuss it at this point. It's probably gonna take 6 to 8 more months. And then when you give them the money, I'm not even saying that giving money to small businesses wouldn't be a good idea. Many of these businesses are at risk of potentially going out of business if a lot of people are moving, but they're not the only people that need help. Just like literally cash transfers to the individuals who live in the affected area is a very easy thing to do, would be wildly popular in East Palestine, and even Fox News would have to at least be silent on it. There's no way they could attack you for that, I assume. Jordan?
The people who lose the most here are the people who have to relocate, who aren't small business owners. I'm so tired of that being the response to every crisis. Oh, we just need to give loans to small business owners. Not everyone owns a business there. And many of the business owners there might not even live in East Palestine.
Yeah.
So like how many are franchises, right? It's a very small town. How many business owners are there? But if you have like so many Americans, most if not all of your equity and wealth tied up in your home.
Oh my God, yeah.
And this happens in your neighborhood, who's gonna buy your home? You just have this possibly underwater asset, you can't sell it, but then you have to relocate. With what money? What about them? What about people who are renting and they don't have anywhere to work now and they have to scramble to find a job? What about them? I am so tired of small business loans being the response to a crisis. At this point, I don't care. I'm sorry, yeah. I just don't care. I want a single policy that puts people who are the most affected, who don't have the money or the access to money in these situations to get help first.
Yeah, look, I agree. And honestly, if you just give it to all the residents of East Palestine, then in theory, the business owners who live there will get the aid. I would even be fine, I'm fine with it being a part of it, but just a part of it. And I will remind everyone, this feels like, while it's a tragedy in its own right and deserves to be thought of and responded to as one, this is also like kind of a preview of environmental disasters and the aftermath to come. So what we're getting right now, and you did a great job of alluding to the fact that you can't just sell the house if no one's gonna buy it. And think about how long it's gonna be before the first thing that people think of when they think of East Palestine isn't the toxic chemical burn. Our lifetimes, maybe, probably for the rest of time. This is like Ben Shapiro telling people with homes on the coast of Florida, well, when the ocean rises, just sell. Yeah, that's a little bit easier said than done, bozo. And we're already seeing like how little will there is politically to help out these people. This is a small community, relatively small amount of people who've been affected. What's it gonna be like when, you know, like all of the crop growing areas in the center of the United States are just wasteland, when the ocean is like swamping multiple cities along the eastern seaboard? Like, these are significant problems to come, and we've shown that we don't have the collective societal will to deal with a tiny little test case. And I want to focus on another aspect of what that response should look like. But first, a fact check. So ever since the derailment in East Palestine, there's been a lot of concern about the possibility that deregulation or lack of regulation on trains contributed to it. But don't worry, Glenn Kessler of the Washington Post has a response. No. It wasn't Trump's deregulation that did it. You can see the article right here and you can read the entirety of it. If you want, so far, Trump's rollback of regulations can't be blamed for Ohio train wreck. So he agrees with Donald Trump, who earlier said, I had nothing to do with it, nothing at all. for the first time in his life, not taking blame for something. But anyway, I don't know if specific actions that Trump took increased the chance of this happening a little bit or a lot or made it a guarantee. I don't know that for sure. And we haven't claimed that it definitely contributed. We've said there's reason to believe that it might have. But I do want to take issue with a little bit of the fact checking that happened here. So as an example of, he goes through a bunch of different things that happened under Trump, whether they could have potentially impacted this. And so one, the most important, I think the one that people are focusing on the most is regulations on installing electronically controlled pneumatic brakes. So modern brakes rather than brakes from the 1500s or whatever. And so in this article on the Washington Post, he says, NTSB Chair Jennifer Homendy said on Twitter that the repealed rule was not relevant to the accident because it would have only applied to high hazard flammable trains. Whereas the train that derailed in East Palestine was a mixed freight train containing only three class three flammable liquid cars. This means that even if the rule had gone into effect, this train wouldn't have had ECP brakes. And that is enough for Glenn Kessler to then say, that means you can't blame them for this. Well, first of all, I would ask you to free your mind a little bit. In theory, we could have regulated. Now, yes, Trump is no more responsible for not doing more stringent regulations than Biden or Obama was, but that is something that could have happened. So maybe they all deserve some blame. But also, they allowed trains that contain multiple flammable liquid cars to not qualify as high hazard. That's a choice that was made. So in theory, this could have applied to those trains. And even beyond that, he acknowledges in his own article that one of the people who helped write the rule as administrator of the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration said that if the rule hadn't been delayed and then shelved, she believes that there's a variety of reasons that the train companies would not be selectively installing it on one train. They would want the trains to be able to haul different types of cargo, so they all would have gotten the brakes, which means that this potentially could have helped. Again, we don't know for sure, but this is one of those fact checks where the fact checker is going out of their way to be defensive towards the person that they're clearly trying to protect with this. Sorry, Jordan, I know that that's a lot there, but what do you think?
Well, you're right. And I think Obama, Trump, and Biden, they all share some blame here because those rules that they're talking about, the classification of these trains, that could have been changed and could have been heightened under Obama. But the rail industry, the American Association of Railroads, their big lobbying group, fought it, pushed back against it. And you know, Trump repealed what little rules they had. Biden and Pete didn't reinstate them. So it's all of them. And you've seen people on both sides just pointing the finger. It's like, hey, everyone sucks here. Glenn Kessler also comes from the Royal Dutch Shell family dynasty, so I don't expect him to be a real neutral arbiter of truth in anything related to fossil fuels or industry, anything potentially hazardous to people. But yeah, that's who his family is. So
that is interesting.
I think his opinion is perfectly fine to disregard in the situation. But really, we need tougher regulations and we need these brakes on all trains. The technology is there, let's just do it. But the thing is, they won't because it costs money. They don't want to do it because it costs money. Meanwhile, they've spent billions on stock buybacks over the years with very, very little being spent on capital or in infrastructure investments. So that's what they care about. It's enriching their shareholders, giving themselves huge bonuses. They don't care about people in East Palestine. They don't care about the workers. They don't care about anybody affected by their many, many, many derailments every year. And to sum that up, Pete said in an interview recently, well, people are making a big deal out of this. I'm paraphrasing. People are making a big deal out of this. But really, we have 1,000 or so derailments every year. That's bad. That's really bad. I think we should work to mitigate, not just be accepting of. We need to figure out how do we reduce that number. 1,000 and we're okay with that. How many days are in a year, John?
I don't know, like dozens, but... Yeah, no, that does seem like probably too much. No, if you had asked a random person 6 months ago how many train derailments there are in America, they'd probably be like, I don't know, man, are there 5? That seems like a lot. But anyway, yeah, no, you're totally right. there is a lot of blame to go around. Even if it was specifically like the ECP thing, Biden could have reinstated it. We don't know for sure that there would have been enough time for them to put the brakes in. And again, at the end of the day, we don't even know for sure that the brakes are the cause. But deregulation, not just in terms of that regulation was taken away. I mean, a governing philosophy where our approach to regulation is what can we do to benefit corporations? That clearly is to blame. And if you're a conservative watching this, when a mile and a half long train loaded down with chemicals that are both deadly and unpronounceable is barreling towards your town, what do you want first and foremost on the mind of the legislators that are writing legislation about what's going to be on that train and what's not? Do you want them to be thinking about the interests of the train company or the people who live next to the train tracks? Because there are two types of political philosophy that could govern our country. And we've had the one, let's let the rail barons have what they want. They've been in power for hundreds of years and we've seen what comes of that. Maybe we can switch it up a little bit. But it doesn't look like we're going to. And really fast, so for Glenn Kessler, again, like, hey, everybody, pump the brakes, wink, wink, on criticizing Donald Trump. He's defending their stance on deregulation as the Republicans are broadcasting that they don't want to do any regulation in response to the derailment. You have this article coming out on Politico, I think it was. They're urging no burdensome regulations on freight rail coming up after this. So you had Senator Rick Scott asked, what should lawmakers do? And he responds, well, start doing our oversight and stop approving people that don't know how to do the job. You get it? Replace Buttigieg. That's it. Just replace Buttigieg and let the toxic, like, wasteland trains keep barreling through your town. Others were asked about what they should do, and they want to wait until the National Transportation Safety Board finishes its work in maybe 18 months, once, you know, everyone has forgotten about this. So again, do nothing. And Representative Troy Nels, he was asked about just increasing the maximum penalty for violations of safety regulations. And he said, we shouldn't even do that. They have an amazing safety record, which isn't true. Again, 1,000 derailments a year. But even if it was true, we're talking about violations of safety regulations. If they have such a great record, then they shouldn't be worried about that. They'd never willingly violate those regulations, right, Troy Nels? But again, to the hypothetical conservative, who do you think is first and foremost on the minds of these Republicans right now? Is it you? Is it the future, you know, like value of your home after it's been doused in vital chloride? Or is it the CEO of Norfolk Southern and their board? Who do you think they're thinking of? Anyway, John, sorry, Jordan, for the thoughts.
I'm so glad you brought up Troy Nels. Let me tell you and your viewers a quick story about how the media is culpable in misleading the general public and doing corporate interest bidding. So Politico, as many people know, have these tip sheet and daily newsletters. You know, Playbook is the popular one. And corporations can buy ad space in them and sponsor these newsletters. As people here who watch TYT understand, it's a very serious conflict of interest because you have this, you know, political beltway media outlet being sponsored by the industries they're supposed to report on.
Yep.
And over the past week, we've seen the American Association of Railroads buy ad space in Politico newsletters touting their safety record. And the day after, so this was a story in The Lever the other day, talking about how these ads have been running, touting this 99.9% safety rating, which, think about that for a second. If someone said, hey, 99.9% of planes don't crash, how would that make you feel? Okay, what about the ones that do? We should do something about the ones that do. And the very next day, in Playbook, Troy Nels, who is the head of the subcommittee that regulates the train industry, is parroting the exact same 99.9% line, which I think any rational person might think that's not true. We need to see more evidence to validate that claim. But it just shows they're just parroting these lines and they're giving open space to corporate propagandists. So it really illustrates the importance of a true independent reader and viewer supported media.
Yeah, 100%. It's so see-through. Why don't they care? Like, they will spend weeks on this story. This is an attack by Michael Regan and Pete Buttigieg against white Americans. They're not even like hinting at that. They're openly saying, this is an attack on white America, an attack on white America, and what should we do about it? I don't know, criticize Buttigieg and then move on. Do literally nothing to stop it from happening to another community of great white conservative people. It's very easy to see. I don't know how they don't. But to circle back to your first point, they deserve help. It doesn't matter how conservative the area might be or whatever. This is what government is designed to do. Hopefully to stop these things from happening, but when they do happen, to help people. If a government can't do that, it's not a government. Anyway, with that said, we need to take a break. When we come back, lots more dramatic news. Don't go anywhere. Okay, there is too much news to get to. We've got some rough stuff, subject matter wise. We're gonna be talking about some foreign policy of the worst varieties. Just a little bit of a heads up as we launch into this.
I think the village of Hawara needs to be erased. I think that the state of Israel needs to do this, and God forbid, not private people.
So that is the minister in the Israeli government calling for the elimination of a town. Now, this is perhaps best described as just a far more explicit version of a philosophy that has been pursued for some time. But that said, don't like to see it being called out so explicitly, especially after all of the violence and forced moving of people and all of that that we've seen for so long, the persecution, political and in terms of violence. Anyway, that was in reference to a town in the occupied West Bank where two Israeli brothers were shot and killed this weekend, prompting a rampage through the area by Israeli Jewish settlers that left at least one Palestinian man dead, others injured, and homes and cars burned. So obviously it goes without saying that the initial violence is reprehensible. But then mass violence targeted at just any Palestinian person who happens to live in an area, I feel like is really, really bad too. And for some reason, the minister's like shockingly extreme response wasn't about the need to not have mob vigilante justice. It was that following all of that, we need more violence against the people who've all already been devastated. That said, there's been an okay, if not amazing, response by the State Department. Here is that.
I want to be very clear about this. These comments were irresponsible. They were repugnant. They were disgusting. And just as we condemn Palestinian incitement to violence, we condemn these provocative remarks that also amount to incitement to violence. We call on Prime Minister Netanyahu and other senior Israeli officials to publicly and clearly reject and disavow these comments. We've already noted our concern, as I did just a moment ago, about the wide-scale indiscriminate violence by settlers against Palestinian civilians in this very town, in Hawara, that led to the death of one Palestinian man, more than 300 residents injured, four seriously, and the torching of an estimated of numerous Palestinian homes and
So look, it's okay. It's again, it's drawing equivalences and all that, as they're always going to. It's calling for them to have a response rather than threatening like the loss of funding if this doesn't immediately stop. Which seems fairly reasonable considering that's been going on for years and years and years and years at this point. But I guess that's stronger than what we might have expected if Trump was still president. Jordan, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's right. The funding is how you really bring this to an end. We give them billions every year. If that comes to an end, watch how quickly their behavior changes. When you have the most powerful military in the world from the richest country in the world giving you billions every year, you're going to feel emboldened. All your behavior, you're going to feel like you're beyond reproach. So that's the way to stop this if they really cared. But the thing is, I don't think they do. We would have seen action already. We would have seen anyone challenge it. But the thing is, if you even talk about how much money we give them, you're labeled an anti-Semite. We've seen that with Ilhan. We've seen that with Rashida Tlaib. We've seen that with AOC, various members of the squad.
Yeah.
It's because AIPAC and the Israeli lobby is so powerful here. They've done a great job conflating criticism of Israel with a very separate problem, which is anti-Semitism. That's totally unfair. It's disingenuous. And they know what they're doing.
So until people can wake up and realize, hey, these are not the same thing. This is a government which has people in open air prisons and is killing them. And you have leaders calling for genocide, exterminating people based on who they are and who, which community they belong to. That is not the same thing as someone hating somebody because they're Jewish. So it's time for Congress, members of Congress, to push back against this AIPAC money and ultimately for the US to stop giving aid to Israel.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. I mean, it's just they, in their response, the ambassador to the US from Israel, Michael Herzog, says, again, starts off with they've been attacking us, they've been attacking. Again, you're being asked to respond to like vigilante mob violence, like just killing civilians. So you go on your whole thing or whatever. And then says it is absolutely not Israeli policy and it's against our values to respond by wiping out civilian villages. Is it? I mean, like, I guess you probably don't have it written down on a piece of paper that it's official policy, but standing aside and letting people be wiped out or moved, buildings be demolished and all that is very much the actual thing that's been happening. So again, it's like Jordan said, it's some people seem to care a little bit, others maybe will pretend, some won't even rise to that level of pretending that you care about the people who were just killed. And then it's just back to, they obviously see the presence of these settlements, the presence of these human beings as inconvenient. And we'd really love to just skip to the end where they don't exist anymore. That is clearly the end goal of this. And it kind of feels like maybe at some point the international community could step in. Maybe we'll just do another 10 or 20 years of this though. Maybe we'll see what happens after that. Anyway, it sucks to go immediately from that story into more terrible people doing terrible things, but let's prep for the D block. Whenever you're ready, we'll jump into this.
The Democrats are giving the homeless drug money and 3 square meals a day, plus free Wi-Fi. Now, when I was growing up, the homeless didn't have cell phones with tents from L.L. Bean. We're euthanizing the homeless. This is like hospice for the homeless. Let's make them comfortable before they die. The only thing we're not doing is reading them their last rites.
So that is Jesse Waters, who has never skipped an opportunity to attack the unhoused. Just part of an ongoing crusade by Fox News against the people with the least in our society, the least money, the least power, the least recognition, the least access to the media, the least literally everything. Every single day they attack these people. And now, because in Oregon, Democratic lawmakers are trying to improve the lot of people who are unhoused, maybe help them reestablish their lives. That is just another opportunity to attack them. Because what you are doing, if you're providing money or whatever that you're providing, is you're euthanizing them. You're killing them because you're trying to stop them from needlessly dying constantly. So you should stop that, which from his perspective would be more moral, which is to just not help them and let them die. Again, it's when you try to get in the brain of one of these insane, sadistic right-wing grifters, you can go mad yourself. But that appears to be the argument that he's making. It is immoral to help get them comfortable before they die. So just let them die, but not comfortable. Jordan, what do you think?
I mean, Jesse Waters is a silver spoon kid. His relatives were publishers of the Saturday Evening Post and the Better Homes and Gardens magazine. He went to a $40,000 a year charter school growing up. Jesse Waters never has cared about people who are experiencing homelessness and never will. He's mad that any benefit could be going to people that he despises. This is a class war and it's aired on Fox. The rhetoric that him, Tucker Carlson, another silver spooner, other people on that network that they have been spewing for years is going to lead to real world violence. We've seen that in people acting on themselves to assault people who are experiencing homelessness. We see that in policies where they're just doing these violent sweeps through encampments. Where are they supposed to go? An out of sight, out of mind approach to homelessness does not solve the problem. And that's all they want. They want them just out of their way. a little compassion would not kill them. And it's just when you have a media for and by elites like you do at Fox, that's the kind of commentary you're going to get.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. It reminds me, we just had that video come out this week of a man just walks up behind a homeless man who's sitting on a curb and shoots him, kills him, executes him. That happened in St. Louis. They found a body in a shack at a homeless encampment. Somebody killed in Kansas City. Here in LA, this news just came out in January. 24% of all of the city's murder victims were unhoused. Obviously, massively, massively, massively overrepresented in that. Again, as Jordan said, a bit of kindness will not kill them. But the current policy actually does a pretty good job of killing quite a few people, actually. And Jesse Waters, again, is a enthusiastic participant in that. It's sort of like the 2 minute hate. So you get people who are comfortable in their living rooms watching Fox News, and you just get them worked up at how unfair society is because the people who are living on the streets have it too good. That's the game that they engage in. That's the fun that they have. It's a little bit of housing to create beds for people who are unhoused in Oregon. That's what they're doing. To invest some money in modular homes and to provide a test payments to help people to see if it will get them off the streets. This is what they're demonizing on the populist Fox News. Anyway, it continues. Okay, we're gonna take a break. When we come back though, oh my God, we've got one of the wildest news stories of the week. Don't go anywhere. Similarly, Telepanda, I'm definitely not reading that. Anyway, with that said, we've got some news to get to, and we're going to be doing a massive tonal shift here from a little bit of levity to just the worst sort of politics.
I was just wondering about, could I put an amendment on that? It would include hanging by a tree also. And also, I would like to sign on to your bill, sir. Thank you.
Tennessee Representative Paul Sherrill thinks that the ever increasing number of different ways that we can execute people here in the United States isn't enough. We need to bring back some of the oldies, like hanging people from trees. He is a currently serving representative. I want to be very clear about that. This isn't some guy who used to be in Congress 20 years ago. This isn't some guy who hosts a right-wing podcast or something like that. He is in state government. And in official discussion on film, he is calling to effectively bring back state-sanctioned lynching in Tennessee, a state that certainly has a history in that area. And so some of the communities that Sherrill represents have a history here. Sparta, his hometown, that was a place where a runaway slave was dragged from jail and hung from a tree on a hill in the town cemetery back in 1855. One man tried to stop the lynching, and a newspaper recorded the mob's reply, "Hang the speaker to the other end of the rope." So when someone tried to point out that this is a horrendous, violent, illegal thing that you're doing, they decided they would kill him too. That's where he was born, actually. By the way, this is maybe the worst thing that Paul Sherrill has done, but it's not the only terrible thing that he's done. He was one of two sponsors of a bill to rename part of a Nashville street after Donald Trump, that's currently named after the late civil rights icon and longtime US representative, John Lewis. So we thought we should take that from John Lewis and give it to a prominent racist. So he was also one of only two state legislators who voted against a 2022 bill requiring schools to include Black history and Black culture in their curriculums in grades 5 through 8. It's almost like there's a pattern here as to what's driving his politics. Jordan, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. When you look at what he's done, all of these things in totality, it's clear this guy is a racist. And it shows where the Republican Party is heading because he's not alone in this. No. This isn't some anomaly. There are plenty of Republicans who not only support him, but in positions of power who think the same things. They just might have a little bit more savviness in how they approach it. They're not going to say something as openly transparent as, hey, we should start hanging people and lynching people again. But they think it and they'll support it. And this goes back to this fight against this fight for anti-racism. It's not just enough to not be racist. You actually have to fight back against these people. And when people think they're, you know, they're too cynical or don't think they have any power in this arena, people like him win. And when you let people like him go unchecked or run unopposed or don't even call them out for their record or fight back against it, this is the consequence. So I really want to underscore the importance of being anti-racist in addition to criticizing people like him.
Yeah, 100%. This guy's a state representative now. He would run in a primary for Congress. I think the Republican Party would reject him. He wanted to be a senator someday. Like, and again, we get to, every once in a while, we get to have a conversation, usually kickstarted by Fox News, like, come on, is there really racism in America? We get to waste a little more time like that while people like this are crafting legislation. Some sort of official censure might be nice. I have a feeling in Tennessee it's probably not coming, considering the state of their state government right now. Okay, with that said, we're gonna jump to, I don't wanna end on a down note. I wanna end on a little bit more of a positive note. It's gonna take a bit of a journey to get there though. Let's jump into this. That's a little bit of a reminder, a little bit of a taste of what was doled out by police in cities across America month after month after month in the wake of the murder of George Floyd, when protesters took to the streets to demand that the police stop brutalizing people. In many cases, they responded by utterly brutalizing hundreds or thousands of people, beating them and macing them and pepper spraying them and ramming into them with their vehicles and those sorts of things, using a tactic in many cases known as kettling, where they will be yelling at protesters to leave an area, but they have already surrounded them, making it impossible for them to leave so that they can then use chemical weapons against them and beat the hell out of them. Thankfully, there was many lawsuits that were launched after this tactic was so widespread, particularly in protests in New York back during 2020. And while there are many lawsuits continuing, we don't know exactly what's going to happen in all cases, in one particular class action lawsuit, New York has now agreed to pay at least $21,500 to each of the hundreds of demonstrators at a protest in the Bronx who were, quote, arrested, detained, and or subjected to force by police officers. They unfortunately don't have to admit any fault or liability as part of this settlement, and we'll have to see whether the individuals will actually agree to this, because obviously some of them might be involved in other cases. But getting at least a little bit of money in exchange for the intentional brutality from the police for some might seem reminiscent of justice. Jordan, what do you think?
Yeah, it's good that the victims are being compensated, but it's bad that that's just going to come out of the, you know, come at the taxpayers' expense.
That's
true. And when you had yesterday, the city council in New York had a hearing on the special response unit. Those are the officers who did this. NYPD didn't even show up. So what do we expect will change if they're not on the hook for the bill? Taxpayers are. They're not even showing up to oversight hearings about this type of behavior and about this unit. What's going to change? And when you have people like Eric Adams in New York and even Democrats across the country saying, no, we need to increase our support for the police and increase police funding with no meaningful restrictions or changes to what they do and what they can do, what's going to change? What incentive or requirement do they have to change their culture? So this is good for the victims, but on a whole, nothing really is going to change.
Yeah. Well, look, in a large sense, when it comes to actually reforming police, that has unfortunately been the lesson that we've taken out of this. But at least for some of these individuals, this might help a little bit. Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for the first hour of the show. Thank you, everyone who's been watching and or listening. But if you're watching on YouTube, Twitch, a number of other platforms, there is more to come in the aftermath. So don't go anywhere. Jordan and I will be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.